It's a championship matchup for us. We got to play championship football. It's bringing the very best you have to bring, no matter what's going on, every single day that you got.
This is the 12th Man Roundtable, powered by Real Steel. If you want power and reliability, you want a Steel. Find yours at steeldealers.com.
This program's been built on that. I'm hoping that you'll see that again by the way we put it together.
It's the 12th Man Roundtable on your home for the NFL. Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Thursday, 8 o'clock, time for our Titans of Analysis. Greg Bell, our Seahawks insider from the Tacoma News Tribune, our own Seahawks reporter Curtis Crabtree, and the quarterback Hugh Millen is here to analyze your Seattle Seahawks, who have just had a miserable season. 3-8 now, following their loss on Monday night to the Washington football team, and are getting set this Sunday to take on the San Francisco 49ers, who have fixed all of their issues and are playing about as well as anyone in the NFC right now. And so much to chew on this hour, but we've got to start with the lead story here, gentlemen, because this just came across the headlines. Hugh, you got to react to this. Ashley Ryan has never seen Rocky or Godfather. Your thoughts, please.
I'm culturally illiterate in many phases myself, so I don't want to take too deep a shot. But we got to start with their parents. I mean, what kind of values are instilled? I mean, this is calling into question. I mean, your best friends, I think, are perfectly complicit in this tragedy.
I
don't know. Yeah. Husband.
Yeah.
Husband.
Yeah. Where is he in all of this?
Yeah. It's probably his fault. Right. All boyfriends I've ever had.
Drag him behind a pickup truck. Yeah.
Your education. Yeah, I mean, USC. Yeah. I blame USC for this.
My fault there as well.
Yeah.
Or their fault. Yeah. Yeah. So really you're saying none of this is my fault. It's all the people around me.
They were enablers, right, Hugh? Isn't that what we said about Pete earlier this week with DK? Pete, they were enablers?
No. Pete, anybody who has five or more texts on their phone from Pete Carroll is an enabler, right? That means that that Pete Carroll trusts them enough, and they are sitting idly by, allowing Major Nelson to live in a 2,200 square foot house, drive in a late model Pontiac, and just have a genie sleep in a bottle.
That's right. They were the enablers, and we will get to the bottom of that here today. So, more tongue lashings for Ashley Ryan before the day comes to a close, because that's unforgivable. So we'll get to more of that in a moment. But I suppose we should start talking some Seahawks football. So, Greg, I'm going to pivot to you. If we could only talk one topic based on what we saw on Monday, where this team is, and kind of crystal balling also the future. If we could only discuss one topic this entire hour, what is the topic that we would discuss? I mean, the play of Russell, the future of Russell in Seattle, the 49ers matchup. Should we go granular and just focus on the next game? A broken offense under Shane Waldron, the chance for a six-game winning streak. I mean, what on earth would we talk about if we could only discuss one Seahawk topic this entire hour?
I think we should talk about that Ashley went to the University of Secluded Children, if she didn't watch either of those movies. I thought it was spoiled, but it sounds like it's secluded.
Sounds like it, yeah, I agree.
The question, the Seahawks... Well, let's just talk about this instead. It's more interesting. The Seahawks question is, what's next? And I'm not talking about Sunday. And we have now entered the phase of the season where it really doesn't matter who they play or where they play or when they play. The rest of the season is a ramp up to where they go from here. And I noticed immediately after the game on Monday night in D.C. that the rhetoric changed. The thinking changed. The outlook changed. They remember talking 7-0 very openly, DK Metcalf and Russell Wilson. I mean, everyone was talking about going 7-0, running the table, getting the playoffs. As soon as that face plan ended in Washington, it was, we are playing for the pride of it. That's what Pete Carroll said. Russell Wilson said, we have an obligation. He used the word obligation to play the rest of the season. Completely flipped. So they at least have understood the reality of their situation. So now the question becomes, who is there going to be a fall guy for this? And if so, who is it? and where they go with Russell Wilson from here. The calculus on him and his contract through 2023 has changed abruptly, needless to say. He missed his first games of his career. He had an injury from which he came back obviously too soon, to the point he wasn't fully 100% effective. And does he want to be part of whatever they go from here? In the bigger picture, I still get no sense that Jody Allen wants to change the franchise and go for an abrupt regime change. He just gave the two top guys extensions through 2025 and 2027. Carroll's under contract through 25, Snyder through the draft of 27. And I don't think after just the second non-playoff season in 10 years that they are going to dump Russell Wilson. The Seahawks have the one piece that the losing teams want, and that's a franchise quarterback who can win and has won a Super Bowl. He, Russell Wilson, is going to be how they win again. He's not why they're losing. He's one of the reasons why they haven't won the last three games, but he is part of a systemic, we can go back and talk about the neglect on the offensive line, the ineffective running game, Chris Carson being out for the year, Wilson's injury. There are many, many, many reasons. Being on the field defensively in 41 minutes a game, there are tons of reasons they aren't winning. But Russell Wilson will be the reason they win again. So those that want to trade him and blow everything up just because they like the drama of it, whatever. That is not the solution to this. And I see no indication that they are going to blow this up and Jody Allen's just going to step in and suddenly become a football authority after she and her brother for so many years have left Pete Carroll and John Schneider in charge of all this.
Hugh, I mean, I could ask you a question, but I'll just give you, open up the door to respond to anything you'd like in that.
Well, I think that Greg makes a compelling case, and certainly that will probably carry the day. I guess my follow-up question to that would be, okay, we've seen Russell Wilson play mediocre football. And by the way, I don't have an agenda. I'm not sitting here saying as an analyst or as a Seahawks fan that I think that they need to trade Russell Wilson. I think that I think given the chatter that we heard in the offseason and what his own desires may be, I think it forces a Seahawks fan or even the Seahawks themselves to confront what's the best course. And Russell Wilson may take it out of their hands if he just says, I'm not playing for you. But again, my question would be, we've seen him play poor football for X duration of time. If X duration of time doesn't concern you, then how much has to be added to X? And we're talking basically about middle of last season, right? Particularly beginning with the Ram game, you could say beginning with the Buffalo game the week before. But it's been, you know, it's been a half of last season, and then virtually every game this season, he's had a couple good ones, including the first game. But it's, you know, he hasn't played consistently good football for a while. So if it's not 1 year, is it a year and a half? Is it 2 years, three seasons? At what point do you say, well, he's older, he's heavier, he doesn't make the plays with his feet. You know, he doesn't keep the ball in read zone ever, and that actually hurts the running game. I mean, while Greg makes a compelling argument to retain Russell Wilson, I think you could make a lucid and compelling argument to trade him, given all of those factors. So, I don't have a strong opinion either way. My only strong take is that you shouldn't have a strong take, because I think that there's compelling arguments on both sides.
Yeah, and I would also add to that, I mean, his trade value right now is also incredibly high, and how much longer then do you expose him if, in fact, there is this drop-off? You know, he's only going to get less valuable the older that he gets from that standpoint. And so, Curtis, I'll get to you. We'll swing it back around to Greg, because Greg should be able to answer these questions. But I'll swing it over to you. First of all, please take a shot at Ashley. We haven't given you an opportunity to do that. And then secondarily, weigh in on this conversation.
Well, I'm kind of like Hugh, where there's lots of holes in my you know, kind of media game on that front too. Those two aren't particularly ones though that fall into my category. So I guess I can thumb my nose at Ashley on that one for not being able to get those couple under her belt. But
thank you for playing along.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it anytime. Ultimately, when it comes down to the Seahawks, you know, it's I agree a lot with Hugh's thoughts on this, because while Russell Wilson might very well be the reason that they win again, right now he is definitely a part of the reason they are not winning right now. He is not playing very good football. And as Hugh mentioned, that goes back to the middle point of last year. So how much of this is, you know, consequential for him, like in the long term, or is this just a bad stretch? And I don't think you can attribute all of this to Russell's finger, because they've been the worst time of possession team in the league the entire season, whether it's been Geno quarterback, Russell the first half of the year before he got hurt, now, whatever the case may be, that's been a constant they've had the entire season. Russell Wilson is the worst quarterback in the NFL on third down this season. He's completing 37% of his passes. So he has been terrible in the one area of the team of the game where the team as a whole has been terrible, and they point to every week as being an issue keeping them from succeeding on the field on a week in, week out basis. And you know, their whole talk of going 7-0 last week, it felt like, you know, Jim Mora, you know, the elder one, like playoffs, winning 7 in a row. I just hope they can win a game. Because the way that they've been playing for the last several weeks is a team that just doesn't feel offensively like it's capable of doing much at all. They've gotten worse every single week in time of possession, where last week they possessed it for just 18-20. They are the worst team in time of possession in the NFL by nearly 3 minutes a game. They're possessing it 24 minutes a game on average. It's just, a lot of these things seem structural, and, you know, it's clearly the worst season they've had in a long time. There's many reasons for it, and Russell is one of those reasons. And so it really makes the discussion of what to do going forward interesting, because there's no good quarterbacks coming out in the draft this year, which would also heighten some extra trade value for Russell if you were going to go down that way, because if you want a quarterback, he's going to be the best one available, and it's not like there's going to be great options from a rookie standpoint coming in. There's so many layers to this discussion, which is what makes it such an interesting point.
Greg, we'll bounce it back to you.
Well, none of what you and Curtis are saying are wrong. I'm saying, where do they go from here? Yes, they stink right now. Yes, Wilson's part of that. This season's over. The compelling issue now that facing the Seahawks is what is the fallout from this? I think Shane Waldron is in trouble. I think that Carroll has to look at the end of this season and say, what didn't we do offensively? We didn't run the ball. Well, Chris Carson had season-ending neck injury surgery. He didn't play but 4 games. Then Rashad Penny was on injury. There are ways they could talk themselves into status quo next year is what I'm saying. I think Shane Waldron should go. He had one chance as a first-time play caller. He was in over his head. He did not adjust in game. He had never, ever made it look like it looked in summer, the way it was designed to look, except for fleeting parts of the Indianapolis game in the first game. That's the only time we've seen the offense doing everything it was built and designed to do, which happens to be the only time Chris Carson, D. Eskridge, and Russell Wilson play together all season. The Russell Wilson question starts to become, okay, if he, to Hugh's point, if he gave the drama he gave last offseason and his agent throwing out 4 teams he'd like to be traded to, although we don't want him to be traded and the Seahawks don't want to trade him, but here's 4 teams that we wanted to. If he did that then, coming off a 12-4 season and a division title because he was tired of not getting out of the divisional round of the playoffs, what kind of, you know what show is he going to put up this offseason? After this torpedo of a season without the playoffs, because the divisional round of the playoffs looks pretty damn good right now. So if he's going to put up that kind of drama, then the Seahawks and Pete Carroll have to decide, do we really want to go through this? And is he going to make it so much that it's ridiculous and it derail the entire franchise? And that could be some, again, of what he did last year, is forcing the Seahawks' hand before his contract ends in 2023. So that's the next step here, is how much drama is he going to put in, and who's the fall guy for all this? And the easy fall guy could be Shane Waldron. Pete Carroll's going to be there as long as Pete Carroll wants to be there. Jody Allen's not going to step in and fire him. So short of Pete Carroll walking away, which I asked him yesterday if he's changed at all his thinking in the future, this season has had him reassess it. Of course, he said no. So short of him walking away, then it's going to be status quo at the top. So then the question becomes, what happens underneath? And that's no matter what happens the last six games, that's what's going to happen here going forward and is confronting this team well into the offseason. I submit to you that there's two things that I'm doing as an analyst. One, telling you what they think and what I know they think, which is that Russell Wilson is part of the solution and not the problem, so therefore they want to keep him and don't want to trade him. And I'm also telling you what they should do, which I believe is keep Russell Wilson, because if you think they're bad now, if they start over with a new quarterback, either in the draft or someone that they could possibly trade for, which is no one that could trade for that would give them production that Wilson has in 10 years, then there's going to be 3 or 4 years like this coming up. Mm-hmm. And does Carroll want, at age 70, to finish his contract with rebuilding with a new quarterback and completely starting over like it's 2010 again?
We have on our roundtable here a guy that Mike Holmgren said the best ever at evaluating tape. I believe those were his words earlier this week. So, Hugh, what do you see? What do you see when you're watching Russell play right now? Is it a finger issue? Is it a Russell issue? Is it a Waldron/scheme issue?
Well, Mike was in a very charitable mood, having just baked the whole batch of Christmas cookies. So I wouldn't take him for his word on that. Well, I think Russell, yeah, you can look at a few of those airmail balls, particularly there to in the flat. And you say, that's not Russell Wilson when he's out there missing guys wide open. But you can evaluate his decisions, and you know, the one where Tyler Lockett was in the end zone and it looked like maybe he would draw a targeting call. That was just wide open. It's just a simple high low read on the corner. He's got Swain in the flat, he's got Tyler in the corner, and just use your eyes. And there's just, it seemed like the old Russell Wilson would have never missed that. There was a play in the third quarter where you had Gerald Everett just doing a 6-yard stop route, just a hitch right in the middle of a zone, right in between two guys in a zone, and Russ missed it so far to the inside, and Everett kind of gave it an ole in there. There's just a number of plays, you know, that sail route on a little bit of a scramble drill where he threw it right at the helmet of the Washington player. There's just so many plays that, you know, just not Russell like, but on the subject of Shane Waldron, I'll just draw one point in the running game. The very first run, if you remember, is about a 3 or 4 yard loss to Alex Collins. And you look at the tape on that, they're running what's called a gap scheme concept to the right side, Russell Williams, right. And they had elements of power because you're pulling backside guard and it's to the tight end side, but it had an element of counter because you're pulling the tight end as well. But it's also with some window dressing with a fake fly sweep. Well, two big things. You asked me about film study. It was an over front, meaning there's a three technique. It's just sitting right in the B gap. That's the gap between the center, the guard and the tackle, rather. The guard and the tackle, in all schemes on this, they double team the three tech. And the center has the shade, meaning the one technique on the backside alone. Here, the Seahawks, they have the guard, the right guard, going to help the center. People don't do that. That means the tackle is one-on-one with the three tech. Well, now you have the tackle get pushed back 3 yards, and while you did the fly sweep motion, Landon Collins, the safety on that side, didn't go with the motion. He comes just screaming off the edge in the C gap. There's nobody there to block him. And so he runs down the play, and you had this just like a grenade blow up 3 or 4 yards. This is the first running play of the game, second overall play of the game. And I look at it and I just say, that's just bad design. I don't care who your offensive line is. You can have bring back Hutch and Walter, add Forrest Gregg and, you know, John Hanna, like the best line in the history, Munoz on the right. If you draw the play up like that, you're not going to be successful. So there's just so many problems with this offense right now. Russ is a lot of it, but there's a lot of other things as well.
Yeah. And yet Russell and Shane Waldron have both seen Rocky and Godfather. So I don't know who we should be angry about. I still think it's Ashley. All right. Coming up in our next segment, we'll continue with our 12th man roundtable. We'll talk about the San Francisco 49ers and how they're playing exactly how Pete says he wants to play. Sports Radio 950, KJ.
You'll love.
Now back to the 12th Man Roundtable, powered by Real Steel. If you want power and reliability, you want a Steel. Find yours at steeldealers.com. On your home for the NFL, Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
I'll tell you who hates Ashley Ryan right now. Talia Shire. She can't stand you. You're basically a trash. She's an actress in both of those movies that you decide to flaunt your finger at.
Oh.
Yeah, it's only her best work ever, and you don't like either one of them. I don't understand it. It's Chuck and Buck in the Morning, Sports Radio 950 KJR. We are roundtabling here today. Hugh Millen, Greg Bell, Curtis Crabtree with you. We have discussed big picture for the Seahawks, who are off to a 3-8 start this year and kind of plan out the string, which is weird. And Curtis, getting ready to face the San Francisco 49ers, who fixed their problems from earlier in the year. They are playing exactly the way Pete says he wants to play. They are allowing, over their last three games, 57.7 yards rushing on average and are gaining 178.3 yards per game on the ground over the last three games, not to mention 39 rushing attempts per game the last three games. They are doing exactly what Pete says he wants to do.
Well, in some degrees, like, when was the last time Seattle's even tried to run a football that many times in a game? I think Pete's desire to be a running football team gets greatly overstated at times, because for most of the last two seasons, they've let Russell Wilson throw the football a large portion of the time. And so, yes, they want to be more successful on the ground, and they are. Were not that Monday night in Washington, and the San Francisco's coming in certainly being much more capable of doing that than Seattle is right now. And they are rolling again. And the talent that they have on their roster is starting to perform to that level and getting them back on the track that we kind of looked that they could have going into the season when they were getting most of their guys back healthy, their Nick Bosa's, their Debo Samuels, or the Jimmy Garoppolo's, all those guys seem to be coming back together and putting them in a good position. So, but this is, for whatever reason, the Seahawks are to the 49ers what the Rams have been to them. Like, in the division, the Seahawks have just kind of owned the 49ers no matter when, how, whatever they've played over the last few seasons, including earlier this year, they were able to beat them down there. I don't know if that applies to this week, given the current state of the Seahawks, but I do think it is an interesting matchup in that regard, because it is something Seattle's been pretty good at, is finding ways to keep that team and Kyle Shanahan in check over the last several years. So I do think this matchup here is interesting this weekend, and they are running the football very, very well, and they're certainly doing their offensive stuff a whole lot better than Seattle is at the moment. So they're far better situated than the Seahawks are as a football team at the current standpoint.
Greg, you can run and win in the NFL. How about that?
I never knew that. I've never mentioned that before. Kyle Shanahan wants to do it. Shane Waldron says he wants to do it and doesn't do it. Pete Carroll says he wants to do it and doesn't do it. But Kyle Shanahan does it. His dad did it. And he learned it from way back to zone reads and Alex Gibbs and the zone blocking schemes of the Denver Broncos. And these guys do it, and they've been doing it for decades. And he comes from an offense that runs the ball. And it's a version of way back to Bill Walsh's West Coast offense and variations that Mike Shanahan took from San Francisco to Denver and won Super Bowls with it. It works, whether analytics and people who were born in 2010 or whatever, whether they want to admit it or not, it works. And San Francisco has the personnel. They have an actual fullback, a real live fullback, and Kyle Juszczyk, who's the best at it. And not only does he block, he also runs, and he catches passes, and is a threat. And that's something else that other teams don't have that San Francisco has and does. What has changed for the 49ers since the last time the Seahawks saw him October 3rd is, one, they are healthier with Bosa's and those guys. And Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt in that game, and they brought Trey Lance in, the rookie quarterback, to play Garoppolo's game plan, and it was miserable for San Francisco that day. They're playing with the lead. And when you play with the lead, you run the ball. Shane Waldron and Pete Carroll may want to run the ball, but they can't when they're behind. Last time they had a lead was against Jacksonville, which is the only time they've won since October 3rd. Think about that. We're in December 2nd right now. In the last 2 months, they've won one time. And that was against Jacksonville, who that day, Jacksonville couldn't have beaten Evergreen State College that day as bad as they played. So that was a one-off, obviously, in Seattle's season. If you don't have the lead, then you're not going to want to take the time of possession to run the ball and chew clock and San Francisco does that, and they've been playing with the lead more recently as well. So while by design they is what Pete Carroll wants to play, San Francisco has the horses, the mentality, and now the way of playing that lends itself to running the ball. And that's what they're going to do on Sunday. And guys like Al Woods and Brian Monet and Puna Ford are on the spot. And those will be the keys to Sunday's game for Seattle to slow down San Francisco running. Garoppolo, obviously, is much better as a quarterback when he has a running game with him. The numbers and the eyes tell you that. And that's the way that San Francisco is going to roll into the playoffs, apparently. It's going to be by running the ball. So, yeah, it'll be Carroll look across the field and say, this is how I'd like to play. But he needs to have a play caller. He needs to have running backs and an offensive line that can block and run. And he needs to have a commitment to it that San Francisco has had going back to Mike Shanahan, Denver Bronco days.
Yeah, and it's as if Kyle Shanahan, who I think we're all admirers of, it's like he forgot the identity at the beginning of the year and has now remembered where Shane Waldron, has he figured out, do we even know the identity of this offense? I mean, it seems like he's having a really difficult time trying to establish the way that this offense is going to operate.
Yeah, well, he certainly does. And, you know, the absence of DK Metcalf, pivotal in the game plan, is just mystifying to me. And all the rest, we've talked about the Russell not being on the right page and making poor reads. But, you know, for the running game, as you're talking about the running game, I mentioned that opening play. You also have a number of times where in the read zone concept, you're not blocking that backside end. And I once had a head coach said that one of the first things that he does is he throws on the special teams tape and he looks at PAT block. He says, because that tells me kind of the makeup of the football team, because what happens on PAT block? You just have had a touchdown scored against your football team. You see the heart of them, and whether it's right or wrong, I'm just saying that there's little things you can look for telltale signs. And for this coach, hey, if you saw a great effort on PAT block, that tells them about the culture of the football team. Well, for Russell, trying to tie the analogy, his effort on the read zone after he gives the ball, whether or not he sprints into the alley to try and hold that defensive end or whether he just kind of jogs and watches the play, that the cutback lanes that are so vital to making particularly the inside zone work, that end has to be held somehow. They're trying to do it with bubble screens, and oftentimes Russell is not throwing the bubble screen. It's a real simple read. If it, you know, you got three guys that are participating in the bubble screen, two blockers, one guy. If it's two over three, throw the bubble. If it's three over three, don't. And so he's not executing that part of it. I think it's just remarkable with Waldron, as just to close my thought, that is anybody else on the couch thinking, A, Waldron is probably going to get fired, which would be the third firing in Russell Wilson's career, and then B, would it be absurd, rather than bring yet a new system back, would it be absurd to bring Brian Schottenheimer back? Like, this is how crazy this damn season is going. I actually think that's a cogent thought. Like, because you led the NFL in points, or excuse me, you set the all-time franchise record in points last year. They probably wouldn't do that, but that's how just perplexing and maddening this season has been, as you start thinking stupid thoughts like that. So,
you know what's interesting about that is Brian Schottenheimer drilled the hell out of Russell Wilson on handoff and footwork and made sure that he did the things you're talking about and hold the backside end and carry out run fakes and play actions. And Wilson talked about it last year, or 2 years ago when Schottenheimer arrived, at how meticulous Schottenheimer was at those things. And they spent a lot of time on the practice field doing that. And there's a lot to be said for the fact that Schottenheimer did it and where their offense went with all those little eaches and fundamentals and where it is now. As soon as you said Schottenheimer in the run game, I thought of all the practice time I saw him working with footwork on Russell Wilson doing those things that he's not doing anymore.
All right. Go ahead, Hugh.
No. I'd let somebody else chime in. I think that's a good point. And now you're going to have to address the question, well, what were the factors that led him to be let go in the first place? You know, the slide at the second half of the year. But right now you've got one of three options. You're going to keep Waldron for next year. How do you like that? You're going to if you fire him, then you're going to bring in a whole new offense, a whole new verbiage, what have you, take your shot. Or to the extent that would be an infinitesimal or a remote possibility, would you bring back Schottenheimer? You know, and you say, well, what about Daryl Bevel? I don't know.
Wow.
Jerry Rome, is he alive? But there's a lot of things that when I watch it on the tape and I say, okay, what did that look like in the installation meeting? And you say, it doesn't make sense. Mm-hmm. And so, I don't know. I'm not impressed.
Yeah. Well, we'll close
grass,
out.
The grass ain't always greener is the problem here.
Right.
People think, like, Bevel, and he looks pretty good right now. And, like, Schottenheimer, he looks pretty good right now. And the problem with firing Waldron right now is then you're on your fourth offensive coordinator in six years for your quarterback. And Hugh will tell you that ain't fun. And that's not a way to win games. And so there's the hesitation. But then the flip side is you bring back status quo for next year, and status ain't real quo right now if you want to be winning Super Bowls.
Yeah, it doesn't. Well, we're 11 games into it, and it doesn't feel like it's any different from one week to the next. It doesn't feel like there's even a suggestion that it's coming together. All right, we got to break here, but when we come back, we will close out the hour. We'll get Curtis's thoughts on that. We'll get some score predictions. Mostly big picture stuff we're discussing here today on Sports Radio 950 KJR.
And Pfizer.
All right, final segment with our roundtable experts, Hugh Millen, Greg Bell, and Curtis Crabtree here on this Thursday talking some Seahawks football. And Curtis, rudely, you got cut off. I know you were wanting to weigh in on the Waldron, so pick up where we left off, your thoughts on that, and then just roll it on over into your prediction for Sunday.
Sure. I'm just going to tie kind of everything together here just because, you know, Russell Wilson says it's not his finger. He adamantly says it's not his finger. Pete Carroll says they don't see it in practice as it being his finger. It's probably his finger a little bit, at least to some extent. But let's take him at his word for a moment that it's not. Well, then what the heck is it? Because if it's not the finger causing these issues right now, then that means that would suggest that there's other major significant things going wrong, and the offense as a whole is probably part of that. I mean, to go from the number one offense in all of football the first half of last year to where they currently are is a pretty stunning fall over the last 12 months. And the offense is probably partly responsible. Russell is certainly responsible in some regards. And trying to figure out the right way forward for them, I don't have a good answer for them. They're going to have to figure out some way to do it, and I don't know what that answer is. But
yeah, Pete going
into
this
week's game, it's truly puzzling how far they've gotten to this point. But then going into this week's game here against the 49ers, it's just, I mean, they've gotten, the last three games, they've gone to basically 21 minutes time of possession, 19 minutes time of possession, 18 minutes time of possession. Last week against Washington, they had five straight three and outs. It's only happened twice in the NFL this year, and both were Seattle, including the first time being in the first 49ers game where a team's gone five and out or three and out five straight times. What have you seen from the offense that gives you faith they can do much of anything at the moment over the last month? There's not anything there. So at the end of the day, I think the 49ers are on a roll. If they're able to run the football, given the way that Seattle has their time of possession issues, it's going to be another 40 to 20 minute sort of split in time of possession because they're going to be able to run it up and down the field and burn clock and all of that as well. So Seattle's defense is doing a pretty valiant effort at keeping them in games, and the offense just can't hold up its end of the bar right now. I think the 49ers are probably going to come up here and win somewhere in the neighborhood of 20-10, and I just don't see Seattle's offense being capable of doing much until they show otherwise, and there's nothing to suggest that that's changing anytime soon at the moment.
Greg?
Curtis is exactly right about the evidence, and why would there be reason to think that the Seahawks are suddenly going to score points and win this game? Look, the Shane Waldron issue,
the offense is so bad. Five straight three and outs, 25 yards total in five drives from the second quarter till 2 minutes left in that game in Washington. It's so bad that I think you cut your losses and say, Shane Waldron, this didn't work. You just didn't, and yes, you didn't have a quarterback for a month, and yes, you didn't have your top running back. And I think that's what they should do. I think what they're going to do is that Carroll's going to say, look, you didn't have your quarterback. You didn't have your top running back. Come on back, and let's get everybody together healthy and see what can happen. That's why I think it's going to be status quo, which is not going to make anybody happy. Sunday, San Francisco runs. They control the time of possession, the field position. The Seahawks barely scrape together two scores, and they lose 17-13. And I just don't see how offensively they're suddenly magically, unless they throw the ball at DK Metcalf 22 times, they're going to lose on Sunday.
Well, I think they should at least try it, don't you, Hugh? At least to give it a shot.
I would say by the middle of the second quarter, that would be a good number.
Close us out, Hugh. Go wherever you'd like.
Well, to put in context, both of our guys have mentioned this five straight three and outs. To put that into context, the Seahawks are the only team in the NFL this season, the only team that have done that, and they've done it twice. They did it against the 49ers. And so it's just inconceivable that you could have a Hall of Fame bound quarterback and that you could attach that kind of millstone around any of those Hall of Fame quarterbacks to have that type of, dubious, inglorious statistic. So I would just say another factor we haven't talked about is Dwayne Eskridge. You know, if he was viewed to be a second round pick and your first pick overall of that draft, why has there not been better use of him? I mean, our vision, guys, of having Lockett and Metcalf coming off a 1,300-yard season and that it wouldn't be preposterous to say he can be pushing 1,500 now in year three. Eskridge, the compliment that we saw. It just none of that has happened. And so it would be real easy to just say, hey, I'm cutting my losses, but it does leave you the conundrum then who's his replacement in Waldron. So I don't feel good about this. I think that the 49ers are going to come in and they're really going to test Seattle's will here. Seattle probably for the first time is thinking about their golf tee times in January. Mm. And with Juszczyk and that physical blocking, at the tight ends, they at their best have been the most physical running team since the glory days of Marshawn Lynch in the NFL. I really truly believe that. And so if they can get that thing cranked up, that's going to be that could be another long day at the time of possession counter and the time of possession meter this Sunday.
Well, tomorrow, X's and O's, Hugh, I want to talk more about Eskridge, and I also want to talk about Deebo Samuel and what he's doing for the 49ers, because we didn't really get a chance to do that here today. So put that down on your list of things I'd like to discuss. Yeah.
He may not play on Sunday. Samuel's injured, so that may help Seattle.
Oh, well, that does help, not having to tackle a tank with legs. That'll be great. All right, that'll do it for us here in the roundtable. Thank you, gentlemen. Great job, as always. Hugh Millen, Greg Bell, and Curtis Crabtree, our 12th man roundtable here as we wrap it up here on a Thursday. Coming up next, in case you missed it, a few minutes on college football with our college football insider, Rick Neuheisel, on Sports Radio 950K.